with all of this going on and with such a busy time of the year, we've decided to do something a little bit fun today for the end of the year, haven't we?
We have.
And we have written down and haven't shared with each other a whole heap of questions to learn more about each other. And I've had a bit of fun writing these, to be honest.
Oh,
here.
Jesus.
Welcome to the Thought Leaders Business Lab. It's time for you to increase your influence, grow your business, and scale to freedom. Now, let's enter the lab with your host, Samantha Riley.
Welcome back to another Thursday episode of the Thought Leaders Business Lab. I'm here with my fabulous co-host, Tim Hyde. How are you going today, Tim?
Good, Sam. Tired.
Oh no, what have you been up to?
I've been up in Sydney a lot lately, up your way, 8 out of the last 12 days. And of course, I think when I travel, I tend to just like burn the candle at both ends. So my work days sort of suddenly go out to sort of 12, 13, 14 hours, not including then the celebratory drinking time afterwards.
It's more of that, isn't it? Because I know I spent a few of those days with you.
but that was business time. Relationship building time is important.
Absolutely. It's really important.
It has been, as we come into the end of 2019, it has been a pretty full-on year with lots going on, both personally and professionally, and you know, lots coming out of the woodwork at this time of year as well.
Absolutely.
But it's been fun. Yeah, crazy fires at the moment as well.
Oh, I can't even see out of my balcony today. There is so much smoke I can't even see on the other side of the road.
Yeah, it's cleared up a bit here today, which has been good. But like I'm driving out of Sydney last Friday, I was just up and back for the day. You know, so 6 hours of driving for a 4-hour meeting is always fun.
Yeah.
Like I couldn't see, you know, the sky was, you know, the sun was this little red orb, brown sky. And as I got down the M5 towards Canberra, you know, on the right-hand side towards the Blue Mountains were just these plumes of smoke. And then, you know, left and southwest was all blue sky. And I took a couple of photos, which I might throw up in the show notes as well, of what it actually looked like looking back at Sydney. It was pretty crazy.
It's scary, scary times. Scary times.
Mm.
Yes.
We need some rain, don't we?
We need a lot of rain. I hope that they do clear up soon. We've certainly got family that are in the fire zones, so it's been stressful, obviously, for them more than us. But, you know, our thoughts are with everyone at the moment and the firefighters, and hoping that they clear up soon.
Absolutely.
But with all of this going on and with such a busy time of the year, we've decided to do something a little bit fun today for the end of the year, haven't we?
We have.
And we have written down and haven't shared with each other a whole heap of questions to learn more about each other. And I've had a bit of fun writing these, to be honest.
Oh, Jesus. what will this reveal?
Look, what's business?
I don't know that we necessarily know these things about each other yet.
Well, no, that's why I decided to ask you.
Okay. We're going to go one for one.
Yeah? Jump in.
We're going to go one for one.
Yeah. Can I start?
You may. Ladies first.
Thank you.
Can I pass?
No, and you can't phone a friend.
Oh, Jesus. No lifelines. Is this one again, one of those Monty Python moments when they ask, what is your favourite colour?
Do you know what? I am so not a Monty Python fan.
Are you?
No.
I can't talk to you anymore.
The end. Anyway, thanks for joining us, everyone. I don't find it funny at all.
I think that just got to the point where I was like, I don't know what else to put in this.
Yeah, I don't like Monty Python. But anyway, it's not my kind of humour.
Yep.
But what I want to know, Tim, is what were you like at school?
Okay.
I want to know if you were the class clown. That's what I want to know.
I don't know that I was the class clown at all. I am now. I mean, I was a repressed class clown. But I was definitely not a very good student, I think. And I look back at school, and of course my son's now 14, so he's just getting into high school. And I see very similar traits with him as well, that he just gets bored of school.
So did you spend lots of time doing sport? Like, was that what you did, or you just completely...
I spent a lot of time playing 500 and Risk.
Well, that's quite similar to being an entrepreneur, isn't it? It's just, you know...
Oh, yeah, look, all probability. I think Yeah, I was definitely not a good student. I was probably a good student in the subjects that I enjoyed and with the teachers that I got along with, you know, and really resonated with. And I see the same things with my son as well. I don't know that I'd necessarily say, James, go to university because that's a done thing. I did that because I was the eldest child and I was kind of, you know, expected. I grew up in a family that weren't at all business oriented. Right? No one in my family that I know of several generations back has ever been a business owner. They've always been employees. And I think if you grow up in that environment, you're always expected to go to college, go to university, get a job and, you know, and work your way up the corporate ladder or the government ladder. Right. Mm-hmm. And I that didn't really fit for me. Mm-hmm. And so subjects like math, I was already really good at, you know, business management, economics. I could have done that all day, every day. And it never really seemed like school. And I probably could have done quite well, but then I had to go and do these, you know, physics and, you know, chemistry and science and history and English. And I hated those things. And I don't know, there was necessarily, I didn't get along with my teachers, but whether it was the teacher or the subject, you know, I certainly wasn't very good at those things. And even in things like math, which came really naturally to me, I didn't pay much attention at all. I got plenty of dusters thrown at me, put it that way.
Oh, those were the days, that great smell of the duster hitting the desk and you're coughing with all that chalk going up your nose.
Well, you can't do it anymore because it's all whiteboards.
No, I also don't think you can do it because I don't think teachers would get away with it now.
No, probably not.
No, it's a very different world.
You were like at school. That's not one of my questions, though.
Well, you'll never know.
I might have to adjust my questions just to change them. I'm going to go with a nice, easy one to start with for you,
okay,
Sam.
I hope it's easy.
Okay, so you're going to fix one of these two things, world peace or world hunger. Which would you fix?
Well, that's deeper than my question, isn't it? I think it would be, okay, this is the way my brain's going. I think it would be world peace because I think off the back of world peace, you would automatically fix world hunger.
Oh, that's cheating.
Why? Why is it cheating? Both.
No, world hunger.
No. Entrepreneurs, they know they don't have to choose A or B. We know that we can have A and B. That's it's just right. about just innovating and deciding how to do it. So I'm
That would be true. We would be able to spend a lot more global military spending on other things if we had world peace.
I think that if there was world peace, there'd be a lot more empathy for people and you would, you know, there would be more priority to fix some of the things that some people turn a blind eye to.
Good one. All right. You should be on like a pageant stage.
Oh, yeah, because I'm so gorgeous and all. Yeah. No.
Is that the answer? What's important to you? World peace.
I want to know, Tim, what are you afraid of?
What am I afraid of?
Yeah.
I don't know that I'm afraid of much at all. I probably have a morbid fascination of getting eaten by a shark. I reckon that would really suck, to be honest.
You reckon? I reckon you might be right.
That would probably be not very good, to be honest. I usually joke and say that I'm, you know, I have some allergies. One of them is to poverty.
Yep, I like it.
I don't have the normal fears, I think, that a lot of people have. Like, I'm not afraid of public speaking. Mm-hmm. I know that terrifies people. I'm not afraid mm-hmm. of death, particularly, because I know that I'm already dying and it's inevitability. So, you know, why be afraid of it? I'll do what I can while I'm alive. So, yeah, my fears are kind of weird ones like that, I think. And I know that, like every entrepreneur, we probably have at times a fear of being found out as a fraud. You know, so be it.
Yep.
You know, I do what I do. Yeah, so I think if I had a fear, it's probably being eaten alive by a shark.
Wow. Well, I guess...
That's pretty random, isn't it?
It is pretty random, but it's also maybe that's why you live in Canberra. No water anywhere near.
Potentially. All right, here we go. Childhood dream job. As you were growing up, what was your dream job that you always wanted to have as a kid?
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so this is so easy. For my whole life, I wanted to be a ballerina. I wanted to be a professional ballet dancer, and that was all squashed because, A, I wasn't good enough, and, B, I was too short, which people laugh because it's, you know, it's well known that ballet dancers are generally quite short. But the whole idea of how tall a dancer needs to be is that when they're on their toes, they still need to be around the same height as the male. And I could be on my toes 20 times over and I still wouldn't be the height of most males. You don't know, wouldn't. I'm extremely short, haven't hit 5 foot.
And it probably wouldn't work if you were standing on a box.
Nah, not so much, hey. So at about 12, I decided that I would be a ballet teacher instead. And that's what I did for nearly 20 years.
Yeah. So I just actually realised it. You got to realise your child in Trangle.
Yep.
I never did.
Absolutely loved it. Absolutely loved being a dance teacher.
Very cool.
Yeah. All righty. I want to know, Tim, what's been your funniest parenting moment?
Oh, God, my funniest parenting moment. I think my funniest parenting moment and perhaps my epic fail parenting moment are the same one and the same thing. We've been living in our house now for 7 years. And when we first moved here, my son was 7 years old. Oh, I might change my funniest moment. Oh, no, I'll tell you this one and then I'll tell you another one.
Okay.
And we'd always, I guess, jokingly taught our son James how to sell shit, right? In his bouncer. Like he would used to sit on his, back step and eat peanut butter. He did olive oil tastings when he was 1 year old, sitting on the kitchen bench sort of things. But we always taught him that he could kind of do anything and be anything he wanted to be, right? As long as he could then sell something.
Uh-huh.
Right? Either it was an idea or a product or whatever. And when we first moved, and as a result, he's kind of grown up quite fearless. It was one Saturday, my wife's in real estate and she was out doing some open homes. I was in our home office on a call to a client and I assumed that my seven-year-old son, or might have been six at this stage, was either playing Xbox or watching TV in the house because I could hear the TV in the background. My wife came home and gave me a kiss and then called out to James and couldn't find him and then came back into me and said, oh, where's James? And I said, I don't know, I assume he's in his bedroom or watching TV or something. And she disappeared from the office again and then came back and said, oh, no, he's not in the house.
Right?
And so I'd lost him. And, we freaked out a bit and we sort of rang all the, the friends in the neighbourhood that he would normally hang out with. And there weren't that many at that stage because we literally, we're 2 or 3 weeks into our new place. Called my sister who lives one suburb in one direction. He's not there. Calls my brother. He's in one suburb in the other direction. He's not there either. Get in the car. We drive around the neighbourhood. We can't find him. And, of course, my wife is now freaking out.
That's exactly what I'm thinking right now.
And I'm trying to be cool, calm and collected and go, no, it's okay. He's responsible.
At 6 years old.
6, 7 years old. And sure enough, we're about to call the police. We're standing at the front gate and we literally got the phone in hand. And sure enough, this little kid comes dancing down our driveway through the front gate into the house, massive big smile on his face like he's super proud of himself. And I can hear these coins rattling in his pocket. And he sort of reaches into his pocket and lays them all out of the table. And there's about $20 there. And I go, where the hell did he get $20 from? Okay. And then my second thought was, which is probably the funny one, is that it's not drugs because clearly it's not enough money. Right. So it turns out that he'd actually been watching TV and he'd seen the RSPCA ad with the wombat that runs across the across the screen. And he had decided in his little seven-year-old brain that it would be a really great thing to raise money for the RSPCA. So he went out doing door-to-door sales, selling loom bands, which were little rubber band bracelets they had a few years ago.
With
the kids. And so he'd gone selling door-to-door. And then I asked him that night, I did find myself going, thinking, no, if I tell him no, he probably will squash that little entrepreneurial spirit of his. And I thought, rather than saying no, let me sort of redirect that to maybe a more positive thing and saying, okay, look, if you're going to do this again, just please let us know where you're going and we'll come with you. But secondly, I asked him, I said, did anyone say no? And he said, yeah, lots of people said no, Dad. I said, well, next time you do that, make sure you get their name. And when you knock on the neighbor's house, say, old Sid next door said that you'd be interested in one of these things and that you should buy one. And what's your name? Sure enough, he went out the next day and made twice as much money. Didn't tell us he was going, but took it all into the RSPCA and gave them about $50 or $60 to the girls at the RSPCA and made them all cry.
Oh, that is a fantastic story.
And then wrote handwritten notes to everybody to say thank you for donating.
That is such a good story. There's not really too much epic parenting fail in that. Losing your kid is a bit of an epic fail, but wow, that's fantastic.
Yeah, he did actually go and sell his mother's old mobile phone the other day to one of the kids at school for $450 and then retrospectively negotiated a 20% commission.
Okay, so there's still some work to do there.
There's a little bit of work to do.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, that's my parenting moment.
It's fantastic.
All right, now I want to know for you, what's your worst boss moment? Either for you as in it, because you haven't really worked for anybody else.
I have a little bit.
Briefly, but what do you reckon is your worst boss moment where you've had a fail?
Oh, straight away, I know what it is. And it's funny because I've just spent the weekend down in Adelaide with my boys and with the rest of the family. We hired a beach house and there was 12 of us in the beach house and a few drinks on Saturday night. And my boys were sharing all sorts of funny stories, which some of them weren't funny. But one of them was this actual story. And it was a super epic boss fail. This is where I learnt about leadership in a big way. So we just bought our second dancewear store. And one of the girls that worked on the store, I wasn't too keen on. I didn't think that she lived up to the reputation that she had put forward. I liked her as a person. I just didn't think that she was up for the challenge and of the position that she was in. Myself and the kid's dad, we used to talk about business all the time at the kitchen table. And this is where I learned that you probably don't talk about everything at the kitchen table. Because one day, my gorgeous son, Connor, at 3 years old, who was so cute, blonde dimples, everyone loved him, ran into the shop and said, "What's your name?" To the girl. Let's call her Julie, just for this story. That wasn't her name.
Names have been changed to protect the innocent.
Absolutely. And she said, "Oh, I'm Julie." And Connor, in all his innocence, goes, "Oh, you're the one that my mum doesn't like."
Oh, God.
I wanted the ground to swallow me up. I'm pretty sure she did too, as well as being pretty grumpy with me. And I thought, yeah, that probably wasn't a really great thing to do. that was an epic.
Kids are the wonderful innocence of youth.
Yeah, it taught me a big lesson very, very quickly.
That's awesome. I love it.
Yeah. I didn't I think say much
had,
at the time.
I think we've all had those ones, haven't we? The kids have said shit that they're not supposed to say.
Oh, so many times, so many times. I could give you 50 right now, but I won't.
All right. Well, that's your worst boss moment.
That is. All right. Now, I know that you've been married to your wife, Penny, for a lot of years. Around 20 years?
We've been together for 22 now. We've married for 17 as of March. I think so. March next year. 2013. What does that make it? Is that 17 years?
For 2013?
No, 2003 we were married.
Okay. Yeah, something. Maths is not my strong point. You've been married to Penny for lots of years.
I have been, yeah.
So I think that's really awesome. First up, congratulations.
Thank you.
I want to know, how did you woo her? Where did you take her on her first date?
I don't know that I did take her on first date. Oh, yes, I did. First date. I actually worked with her cousin, which is how we got introduced. Uh-huh. And Penny had just moved to Canberra from Byron Bay.
And where were you working?
I was working at the Civic Public Library.
Oh, cool.
I wasn't even a librarian. I was a librarian assistant.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, so Penny had come in and apparently she was quite infatuated with me. And we first met on the concourse at University of Canberra. And I was doing a martial arts demo with my brother. And we were both in our black gis. And I had a couple of butterfly swords and he had an 8-foot long staff. And we were smacking the crap out of each other with these things.
Uh-huh. Having a right old fabulous time by the sound.
As you do, right? So this is back when I was still training martial arts. And I think that year we went off to China to train with the Chinese national wushu team, incidentally, which was like super awesome. Anyway, so we were doing this and she was quite fascinated with this whole thing about me. And I said, "Oh, you don't really know anybody in Canberra. Let's go out with a bunch of people, right? And we'll have a good time." And sure enough, we walked from my place in Aranda when she turned up. I was literally sitting on the floor drinking red wine from a bottle and eating a bowl of spaghetti.
Super classy.
I know, right? She still thinks her dad would have been horrified if he'd walked in and seen me like that. Anyway, I went out, we had a good time, and then a couple of days, I think a week or two later, she had gone back to Byron for holidays. I think it was the first break of term or something, and I used to suck on the phone. I thought, this is back when we didn't have mobile phones, really.
Mm-hmm.
She would call me up while she was on holidays, and I'm like, this is ridiculous. I'm having this really long phone call and I really don't know what to say on it, right? Because the phone back then was like, I'm going to meet you here and hang up, and away we went. And then I thought, bugger this. She's kind of obviously wants me to say more, but I don't really want to say anything else. And I turned to a mate of mine who was a bit random at that stage and said, do you want to go on a road trip? And literally he's gone, yeah, sure, why not? And I, you know, turned back to the phone and said, Pen, I'll see you soon. And literally we got in the car and we drove from Canberra to Byron Bay.
Uh-huh.
That afternoon, I think it was about a 10 or 11 hour drive.
Yes, not a short trip.
It's not a short, yes, definitely not a short trip. Might even be a 12 hour drive. And rocked up on her doorstep at 12:30.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so that was how I wooed her, I guess. And that was quite impressive, and got to meet all, you know, her mum and all the friends who had just conveniently turned up to see this bloke who had just driven 12 hours to see their, their little girl.
That's great.
Yeah, anyway, and then I had to call in sick. I had to call up a cousin and say, hey, do you mind covering my shift on Monday? I won't be able to make it back in time.
Oh, that is such a sweet story, Tim.
There we go. So that's how we, wooed her.
That's how you wooed her. Well, that's very impressive.
Yeah. We did have our first kiss by the dumpster at the back of the UC bar. That was super romantic.
I'm so glad that you popped that one in there to pop the bubble of the beautiful story.
I can do romance if I choose.
Well, clearly you must have done something right. You've been married for a long time.
I know. You've got to keep working on it, though. All right, so let's do this one. Here's something that I saw a long time ago. This was a John Cleese thing. I'm speaking of Monty Python. Is he John Cleese Monty Python? Yes, he is. He did a TV show on wine tasting. Right? Uh-huh. I try to simplify it all because, you know, we don't want too many wine toffs. All right? And he hypothesized that if you put wine into a plastic bottle and in a paper bag so you can't actually see the colour of it, right, could you tell the difference? Now, I know you're a big white drinker and not so much red.
Oh, no, I'm either. It just depends on the liquor.
Now, can you how much of a wine toff are you, Sam? Can you tell the difference if you were blindfolded between red or white and then maybe even the varietal of wine?
Well, I was just about to say, not only would I be able to tell if it was red or white, I can usually tell you what variety it is. And someone that I was dating before I met Leon was a wine buff. And our first date was going to a wine bar and the bartender was giving serving us wine. We had no idea what it was. We had to guess what it was. And it was a great date. Not a great partner. I had a great time and got most of them right.
Favourite wine? What's your go-to?
I really love a Shiraz. Shiraz. So I am a red wine drinker, but I don't like to drink it when it's warm. And we normally catch up more in summer because I don't go anywhere near Canberra in the winter. In summer, I quite like a Pinot Grigio at the moment.
Yeah, most days get above zero in winter in Canberra.
I hate the cold.
Oh, you big sook. All right.
I am. Now, let's follow on with the kind of the food and drink theme. I know that you're a big foodie and that you're a great cook. I want to know what's your favourite cuisine?
At the moment, it is Moroccan.
Ooh.
Hmm. Yeah, so Moroccan's my favourite cuisine at the moment. And I kind of like, I always tend to find that if I look at most of the foods I like, they tend to sort of be in this band around the equator.
Okay.
Okay. And I think one of the things I really love about Moroccan is that it has this really interesting combination of, you know, not just textures and foods. They use a lot of fruit in their cooking as well. So this juxtaposition of both sweet and savoury things I really like about Moroccan food.
Can you give us an example of a Moroccan dish? I don't actually think I've ever eaten Moroccan.
So I've got one that I love doing on the barbecue where you marinade chicken in olive oil and honey and ras el hanou, which is a sort of a spice mix, and orange juice.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's something salty in there as well.
Yeah.
And then you sort of marinate it, grill it up, and then you serve it a sort of stew of apricots and olives.
Oh, yummo.
And it's absolutely delicious. That's fairly typical of Moroccan cuisine where you've got fruit and meats and something as well. I do another one, which is a lamb tagine. So a tagine is actually the vessel that you cook it in.
Yep.
And you tend to cook it on quite a slow heat and it kind of keeps a lot of the moisture in the food as well. But I do things like, you know, I put tomatoes in there and carrots and potatoes and lamb and sort of slow cook that down. I usually do it with a spiced couscous as well. So my couscous will have onions and dates and coriander and fennel seeds and all sorts of stuff in it.
Fantastic. Sounds so good.
Tasty. And then like lemon zest and
lot of flavour sensation.
It is lots and lots of flavour.
Love it.
So that's my foodie stuff at the moment.
Nice.
All right. Now, let's do this one. Let's go an obvious one. Why do you do what you do?
Oh, a juicy one. Why do I do what I do? Well, as people know, or they might not actually know, I've been in business for quite a while. I've been in business for heading into 27 years now. And for 20 of those, I was in business with my now ex-husband. And over those years, I worked super, super hard. We had three businesses. I worked a lot of hours. The idea was that if I worked really, really hard now, I could sort of retire later. It was that old society's rule of that's the way it worked. And I had had my kids young, and I just thought if I just work myself into the ground that this would all work out perfectly. And then in 2010, I separated from him. And the biggest realization that I had was, what have the last 20 years been for? I'm exhausted. I'd spent a lot of time not doing what I loved, you know. So I took that time, you know, at that time to really think, what is it that I want my life to look like? And it was very much about, I wanted more traveling. I wanted to spend more time with my family, friends, to really enjoy life. Why I do what I do now is because I want to help other people do that and realize that it's something that they don't have to have down the track. It's something that they can have right now. And with the amazing technology that we have, we are able to work now in a way that we're location independent, where, you know, we're able to not get caught up in the constraints of, you know, what we should be earning or could be earning in a job. So there's a lot of opportunities. And so that's why I really love to help people to really leverage their expertise, turn it into something where they can create the life that they want. So that is why I do what I do.
There we go. Love the passion. Love it.
Excellent. All right, let me ask you. Let's finish this one up. Otherwise, we could be asking questions to each other all day. Which, I don't know, let us know. We might do this kind of episode again. Everyone might go, yeah, you two just rabbit on way too much. I want to know, Tim, what does 2020 hold for you?
That's a tough one. I'm going to pass. No.
No, you can't pass.
can I find a, you sure I can't find a friend?
Pretty sure we went through the rules at the beginning.
Yeah, look, I think 2020 probably won't be too much different from 2019. Well, like, I hope it is, right? Because, you know, we've spent every 5 weeks in hospital with pens anaphylaxis, which hasn't been fun. So 2020, I think, is really just going to be building on the foundations of stuff that I've done this year. So, you know, as you know, Sam, I brought on, you know, some new team members this year who are really sort of kicking goals for me, really happy with how the programs have been developing out. And really, I think it's just going to be that building on that foundation that I've got to kind of just take that next step in business. You know, I think a few episodes ago, we talked about, you know, what's the one thing that you kind of need to get onto that next level, right? And for me, I think it's just going to be, you know, I've got the audience, I've got the consistency, you know, I've got my business model right. And it's really just kind of building on that business model to get to the point where I start to look at JVs and how I kind of work with other people to kind of then continue to grow the business to where I want it to get. I mean, I'd love to sort of get this thing to kind of a couple of million in turnover where I can, you know, comfortably step out when I want to and do other stuff as well. Don't get me wrong, I'm well off to 2 million. But I think you just got to continue to kind of work on it and then tweak where you need to tweak. I'm really happy with where things are at right now. I'm really happy with the stuff we're doing. I'm really happy with the clients that we're working with, most of them.
That was a nervous giggle from this end.
But yeah, I think that's something I want to continue to work on and you know, continue to work with great people, Sam, like yourself, where, you know, we're having fun, right? And for me, if I'm not having fun at what I'm doing, I kind of got to question why you want to continue doing it.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Yeah.
You know, and certainly if you've got this extended period of this is something I'm not enjoying, but I feel obligated to do, I think you need to take a long, hard look at it and say, hey, is this the right? Is this what I should be doing? And I think at Christmas, more so than any other time of year, this is probably the time that we take stock and reflect and say, am I on the right track? To look at, you know, looking back at what your 2019 has been like, and then looking forward and saying, you know, if I keep doing the same thing, will I get where I want to go? Will I have the same conversation with myself and go, yep, I'm really happy with what's occurred.
Yeah.
And if you're not on that path, the sooner you change things up, the sooner you're going to, get to the future you want. So I think for 2020, it's going to be a little bit more of the same. I've got some interesting little side projects underway, which I'm looking forward to seeing how those evolve as well. But, you know, without getting too caught up with the shiny object syndrome, The main focus is just more of the same.
And you're going to be running live events next year too?
I'm going to be doing quite a few live events. So I've already got three lined up for early next year. I'm going to continue doing those into 2020, probably starting to run a few of my own events as well, as we've talked about in previous episodes. Yep. Just small little boardroom style things where we really sort of unpack, you know, the holes in people's business are. So, you know, just reflecting on, you know, what I do is I want to see people succeed. We do it hard in business, and more often than not, we don't know what we don't know, and we leave lots of opportunities on the table. And that's something that I really want to help people fix.
Yeah. And you're very good at it.
Thank you.
Love it. Sounds like an exciting 2020.
Absolutely. It should be fun. Should be fun. One last question for you before we wrap up.
Oh, I was going to try and dodge a bullet there.
I know you were. Okay. No, it's good. It's all even. All right. I'm going to ask a nice, simple one for you that let's roll forward 50 or 60 years.
Mm-hmm.
There is your gravestone there
and
your epitaph
in
Wikipedia, this lasting legacy. What does it say about you?
It says that I helped other people find their purpose. I helped other people live a life they loved, and I helped other people to live their legacy every day and to leave a lasting legacy.
Love it. I thought you were going to say Sam was a funny fucker.
Well, it says that in brackets at the bottom, and she was a funny fucker.
Just kidding.
And she drank a lot of wine. Because, you know, life's all about having fun, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Sam, I'd love this episode. I think we should do more of these.
I was just about to say, thanks for letting me ask you some of those questions. I didn't know any of those answers, and it's been fantastic getting to know you on a different level.
Yeah, it's been good fantastic stuff.
Awesome.
Guys, hope you enjoyed today's episode. It's been fun recording it. We've got a couple more to go for 2019.
Yeah.
Looking forward to big. Hope you can join us in 2020 as well for next year. We've got lots of plans, and hope you continue to join us on the Thought Leaders Business Lab podcast, and of course also in the Thought Leaders Business Lab community on Facebook. Just to search for that, you'll find us in there. You'll find all these episodes, links to show notes, and etc. of course on SamanthaRiley.global. And if you really enjoyed it, we'd love a shout out. Send your questions in, we'll give you a shout out and answer them on the call, and all that other good stuff.
Yeah, definitely send your questions in. I'd love to do this again. I'd love to ask you some questions from our listeners. It'd be fantastic. Lots of fun. Anyway, guys, thanks for listening and joining us today, and we look forward to seeing you next week. Ciao for now.
Discover how to grow and scale your thought leader's business. Check out SamanthaRiley.global. Head over to Facebook and join a tribe of like-minded entrepreneurs in the Thought Leaders Business Lab community.